Ready to pop the question? The jewelers at BlueNile.com have got sparkle down to a science with beautiful lab-grown diamonds worthy of your most brilliant moments. Their lab-grown diamonds are independently graded and guaranteed identical to natural diamonds, and they're ready to ship to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code LISTEN to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code LISTEN at BlueNile.com for $50 off. BlueNile.com, code LISTEN.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. At Mint Mobile, we like to do the opposite of what Big Wireless does. They charge you a lot, we charge you a little. So naturally, when they announced they'd be raising their prices due to inflation, we decided to deflate our prices due to not hating you. That's right. We're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month slows. Full terms at mintmobile.com.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
You are listening to Tech Time with Summers F1, presented by Mist Apex Podcast. We live F1. Welcome to Mist Apex Podcast, brought to you by F1 2018. Today's episode is called Tactical Difficulties. I'm your host, Matt Trumpets, and I'm joined by the hardest working man in Tech F1, Matthew Summerfield, assistant technical editor at motorsport.com and known to all the cool kids on To Enter Tubes as Summers F1. How's it going, Summers? Great to have you back.
It's great to be back with you, Matt, apart from I can no longer touch you because we're on the internet again.
I know, it's such a sad thing. It was so great to just sit there until the wee hours of the morning and have these fantastical discussions about all of the things that we wanted to talk about when we weren't constrained by time, and add to it a great deal of fun karting. But I have a question for you.
Okay.
It's my 20th anniversary tomorrow. And I've gone out and gotten my wife a gift because I've actually for once remembered it ahead of time, which I think is progress. You'll have to agree. However, I've decided to get her a vacuum cleaner. So I'm just like looking around for anyone to be encouraging about this choice.
Well, I think it might be a slight mistake, Matt, but as long as it's one of those brilliant ones that has a fantastic suction on it, then yeah, perhaps you might get away with it.
I guess we will see. But if this is to be our last podcast together, just know it's been an honor and a privilege to serve with you, sir. We are an independent podcast supported by you, the listener. We aim to bring you a race review before your Monday morning commute. We might be wrong, but we're first. If you want to join the live stream, find Mist Apex Podcast on YouTube and subscribe. Click the little bell icon when you subscribe, and you'll get a notification when we go live. What say we go and talk a little tech? Because really, what could be better about life than a relaxed talk about Formula One? Formula One Tech with Summers. All right, enough of that. So, we are looking at the 2018 season, and we're roughly halfway through now. So, maybe the best thing to do would be to start with, and you had a brilliant article in Motorsport, I must say. It's just to start with sort of an overview of the developments at the top and sort of where you think each team is headed.
Yeah, well, I think that the biggest thing that we'd want to talk about would be the battle between Mercedes and Ferrari and how that's ebbed and flowed throughout the start of this season. So I think that comes down to primarily their design choices at the start of the year with the car, which I did touch on in that article that you've just mentioned, Matt. But also then we have to look at the way in which that both teams have approached their development paths. And they're quite different this season. And I think that's had an impact on the way in which that the two teams have tended to perform this season. So if you think about Ferrari, they've had a sort of let's go each race at the development pace, so that they've had parts at almost every single race, whereas Mercedes seem to have taken heed of what's gone on in the opening part of the season, and they've had a large development sort of in the middle of the first part of the season that was to deal with their side pods and try to unlock some performance in that respect. So, yeah, two very different sort of development arcs going on between the lead pair.
Right. And I'm just going to ask, do you think that it is maybe a tactical thing by Mercedes, as in if they stick them all on at once, then it takes Ferrari time to figure out what they're up to and copy it or figure out how to negate it? Or is it really just sort of their chosen development path and cycle that they sort of tend to follow every year?
It's slightly different, Mercedes, this year to previous years. They're a little bit late in the development arc when you compare them to performance being put on the car in the past. They tend to take Spain as sort of the line in the sand where you'd see quite a large update come to the car. But what I think they've decided to do this year is create a development path aerodynamically that matched with their power units introduction. So the two work in tandem with one another. And what we've seen is Mercedes haven't directly copied the Ferrari side pod approach, but they've sort of lent towards it in as much as that they've pushed the side pod inlet backwards to stop the wake of the front tyres impinging on the performance of the side pod and the way that the airflow moves both into and outside of it. So for me, it's a very different path that both teams have taken, but it's for Mercedes, it's a little surprising in that perhaps the biggest update came a few races later than it ordinarily would do.
Yeah, that was very surprising to me, and it makes me wonder, do you think that Ferrari is gaining perhaps an advantage because they're adding a half a tenth here and there at every race? Whereas Mercedes has basically been stuck with a similar design until they hit their big update. I mean, are they leaving maybe some points on the table following that path?
Yeah, I mean, it's always difficult because you only have so much resource. Now, Mercedes obviously have led the pack for such a long time as well. So for them, it's difficult to really try to eke out the advantage more because they're always in the lead. They don't know how much they have to make up. So it's always a difficult one to lead the pack in terms of development. So Ferrari, in some respects, have a better chance at it in that respect. It's sort of a catch-up game. But I do think that they're very evenly matched now, both on power unit performance and on aerodynamics, even though we must remember that the cars are vastly different in their aerodynamic philosophy, their suspension philosophy, and obviously they've got variation in the way that they're using their power units as well. So to see two teams battling so very closely with so very different cars is a fascinating prospect.
Well, and really, that's what I guess everybody who finds the technical aspect of the sport interesting, this is what we've been waiting for, because we have two different approaches. We have teams that seem to be trading back and forth who's quicker and who's quicker at what track. Now, you did mention that you felt they were fairly equal on performance. Are you now hedging you think Ferrari has the better design? Or is this really just you're looking at the overall points on the board and saying that makes them equal?
It's a difficult one because it's very circuit specific and it's very driver dependent as well. So at each different race, we see that one team seems to have an advantage over the other, just characteristically driven by either one of their drivers having an advantage over one of the others or by the fact that that particular circuit suits the power unit characteristics. I mean, we all know that there's a lot of work that goes on behind the scenes ahead of a Grand Prix, but it's also what goes on at the Grand Prix as well in terms of preparation. And if the setup of the car for that particular circuit is conducive to that team's performance, and also the way in which that obviously the ERS systems are working, the way in which obviously they're allowed to run the power unit for fuel, etc., that we're talking about the drivers here. You know, it all comes down to fine margins when you're working this close. I would suggest that perhaps Ferrari have the edge on Mercedes in terms of the aerodynamic side of things, but it's just small areas of performance, pockets of performance. And this is where it's going to get fascinating towards the end of this season in terms of who ends up with the better development curve and who can cut that up, curtail that performance in order to take advantage next season as well.
Okay, so let's not get too far ahead of ourselves. What are we expecting to see maybe upcoming at Spa and Monza from Ferrari and Mercedes?
Okay, well, from Ferrari, we're expecting a new turbocharger, an MGUH, which apparently is quite a development in terms of the performance that they'll get from that. We've already seen that they are going to get an exhaust upgrade that coincides with that. So, you know, they're just piling on performance, but they're interacting this performance with both aero and the mechanical aspects. So much like Mercedes, as I mentioned, have with their side pod update, I suspect we will see sort of a dual development from Ferrari at Spa.
Okay, and Mercedes, do they have anything in the pipeline as well? I mean, it sounds like if you were going to be betting money, that you'd be betting Ferrari would be showing up with more performance at Spa. And they seem to have had more performance outside of the nut behind the wheel, as it were, in the last two races. But you feel like this new turbocharger, MGUH, is really going to give them a decided advantage? Or do you think it's just going to bring them equal? Because, again, Spa would appear to be a circuit that tended to favor the Mercedes design.
Yeah, well, the thing with Spa is a massive compromise. Obviously, you want a low drag car for the first sector, but as you get into the second and third sectors, you need more downforce. So the teams are always compromised in that respect, and it's why we see Red Bull tending to get into the mix under race conditions in the second sector because of their inherent downforce advantage and a slightly slippery car. Obviously, they're not up to the level of the top two at the moment, so I don't foresee them being a massive issue to the lead pair for the rest of this season. But what I do think we'll see is Mercedes opting to introduce a new rear wing and perhaps a new front wing, or maybe just a trimmed front wing, to account for the low downforce sectors on the circuit at Spa. And obviously, this is the trade-off between the two teams that we'll see borne out at this particular race, because where one has an advantage over the other, you know, that they have to compromise with one another to try to get equalised performance, especially when Ferrari seem to have got such a high-speed advantage over Mercedes recently, which is, you know, the opposite of where we've been over the last few years, where Mercedes have made their power advantage count.
Yeah, and that goes back to that interesting GPS data that Auto Motor und Sport had published, and that we've all had a good look at in a lengthy chat about. But they just seem to have a decided advantage on corner exit in terms of speed and drivability that Mercedes has yet to crack. Although, who knows, it's been a couple of weeks, and I'm certain, although they've officially been on vacation, it's hard to not think about that stuff, even when you're hanging out with your family on the beach.
I actually have my best ideas when I'm doing things aside from Formula One. My best ideas come to me when I'm out on the cycle. So, yeah, I can quite imagine that there's a lot of people in the F1 realm that, although they shouldn't be working, are obviously always got their brain ticking.
Yeah, it's hard to avoid if you're really interested in it, because the ideas, they'll just come to you at any time. But let's do look a little further ahead, because we have, in addition to what we are talking about now, we also have some brand new regulations coming in, and we'll get to those later. But we have seen it in the past. A lot of times a championship will come down to who gives up first and focuses on next year. Now, recently, I was fortunate enough to have a chat with Matthew Carter, and he seemed to think that because the regs were aero regs, and because it's Mercedes and Ferrari, and they just basically have two teams, one for this year, one for next year, that they'll pretty much be willing to throw stuff at each other all the way across the finish line. But is that your understanding of it as well?
Yeah, they have separate working groups, and it depends on how much resource that you travel from one working group to the other. There'll always be a switch-off point, and it just depends on how far you're prepared to go off down the season before you switch off development. Because what we must remember is that, although next season's regulations are quite different compared to where we are now in terms of the front wing, there are a number of areas on the car where you will still continue to add performance. So the leading edge of the floor, the barge boards, all the areas that were opened up for 2017 to enable more downforce, those areas still haven't been reined in. So although we'll lose some performance at the front of the car and gain a little bit at the rear because of the rear wing and add some drag, obviously, I think there's still areas that the teams can focus on and carry across for next season. So Matthew's right in as much as that I do see Ferrari and Mercedes sparring it out in terms of development quite late into this season. But there has to be a cut-off point where you think we can't throw more resource here because we will inevitably have an impact on next year's campaign as well.
Right. And I'm just going to go with, based on my own experience and thought, that I think of the two, I believe it's going to be Mercedes that blinks first. Because if I'm Ferrari, and this is the interesting thing about it, if I'm Ferrari, I really want now to win the constructors for Marchionne. I think there can be no doubt about that. And I feel like they will be willing to throw the kitchen sink into it to try and make that happen. But conversely, that's difficult because in terms of tactics up until now, they have been very focused on, it would seem, primarily winning Vettel the Drivers' Championship because they understand there's more marketing leverage in that. But the glory would go to Marchionne if the team wins. I say they might make a play for the team win and keep on, be willing to dump resources longer and start out more behind next year as a result of that. But that's a psychological thing. That is certainly not a technical thing.
I would suggest pretty much the same as well, though, to be fair, Matt. And the reasoning behind it, not only from the perspective of winning for Marchionne, for me is that they've been without a championship since 2007. So this is 11 years without a title up until this point. And so for me, it's down to getting one on the board. And getting one off of Mercedes, because as we know, if Mercedes take another one, you know, that with a regulation change coming in, it could suit one more than the other. So this is their opportunity to get one on the board effectively, and I think that they will throw the most weight behind it in order to achieve that.
Yeah, it is as close as they've been in quite some time. So before we leave this topic, there's one more thing, and again, there was an article just recently about it. Let's talk a little bit about the Ferrari steering wheel and ice bag, for lack of a better word. I don't know if that's technically what you call it over on your side of the fence, but that's sure what it looks like when they dump it up on top of the car.
Yeah, basically you're talking about the dry ice bag on top of the airbox, yep. The roll hoop, mm-hmm. Which the Ferrari have taken to doing between sessions, before qualifying and before the race, etc., in an attempt, it would appear, to obscure what's going on in the cockpit for the rest of the teams. For me, it might be more of a distractionary process in order that there's something else going on in the car, because we all know that teams will take to that tactic in order to try to divert attention away from what's actually being looked at. So there is always that in the background. But what I think Anthony Davidson showed prior to the Hungarian Grand Prix, the footage of the steering wheel and the clutch release, is quite important in this respect, because obviously what would be normally seen from that airbox roll hoop camera has sometimes been obscured by the dry ice bag on top.
Right, but to be clear, you don't think that those little nubbins underneath the steering wheel are anything untoward or anything that Ferrari's up to that might be, well, let's just go with, on the far side of whatever lines that Formula One intended to draw with their regulations. You just think that it's to help the driver better situate their fingers and get the best clutch release possible.
That's right. I mean, I've looked at many pictures of the steering wheel with obviously the access that I have available to high resolution images that a lot of people don't. I've looked at the footage that was shown via Anthony Davidson, and I can understand why the thought process is that there is a button behind the front face of the steering wheel, because that may help to improve the clutch release system. But for me, it's more of a fulcrum. All I'd ask is that if anybody here is listening and wants to understand what I mean by that, if you go and put your hand on the steering wheel and imitate trying to use a clutch paddle behind a steering wheel, it's quite a difficult process because you have nothing to really associate where to place your hands with. Now, by having this little nodule on the steering wheel, it gives a reference point and a fulcrum to work from. So you're effectively able to work the clutch paddle with this sort of nodule on the steering wheel. Now, it's interesting that Vettel and Raikkonen actually use the clutch paddles on opposite sides of the car. So Vettel uses the left-hand side of the steering wheel with his hand operation of the clutch, whereas Raikkonen uses the right-hand side. And the steering wheel has these nodules on both sides of the steering wheel. So to me, it's a process rather than a let's call it a cheat, as some perhaps might want to perceive it as. It's just something as a reference point to hold the clutch bite position, and quite a clever trick from Ferrari in that respect, but nothing untoward as far as I'm concerned.
Well, there will be many disappointed people on the regular show, as they won't be able to blame Ferrari's increased performance on just plain flat-out cheating. So before we go on, you mentioned that you feel like that ice bag over the camera is entirely perhaps a bit of misdirection by Ferrari. What do you think they are trying to really hide then? Have you been able to figure anything out? Do you have any suspicions?
I don't have any suspicions per se. There's a lot going on with the Ferrari. It's a very interesting car in many respects, just as the Mercedes is. But it's far less complicated and fiddly than the Mercedes, let's say. So I think that's why people assume that there must be something going on that different with the Ferrari, in order that it's able to keep pace with relative to the Mercedes, and in fact be quicker than it in some circumstances. In terms of what's going on, I do feel that Ferrari have found something in terms of the way in which they operate their energy recovery system. And that's partly to do with, firstly, being able to produce more power in the mid-ranges, as you've talked about, which shows up in the GPS data. But perhaps also to do with the blown rear wing that we talked about on the live show at karting, in terms of being able to reduce some drag. So, you know, that is a speculation, that blown rear wing. It's just something that makes sense to me in terms of the way in which the performance is relatable for Ferrari. But I would imagine that the biggest advantage that we're seeing from Ferrari is the way in which they operate their energy recovery system. And they're making gains in terms of how much energy that they have to push out for the car this year.
All right, so let's move on to the next segment.
Hello, I'd like to interrupt this podcast to talk to you about our sponsor this week, which is the video game of F1 2018. Have you ever wanted to overtake Lewis Hamilton in Formula 1? Well, now you can in F1 2018. You don't like the halo? We can get rid of that for you. In the video game, you can remove the halo and live life as an F1 superstar. The official video game of Formula 1 puts you right in the cockpit of the fastest racing machines in the world, including every official Formula 1 vehicle in the 2018 season from powerhouse teams like Ferrari and Mercedes. You already drive like a legend, but you can drive the cars of legends in 20 classic cars, including 8 all-new classics like the 1972 Lotus 72D, the 1982 McLaren MP4-1B, and the 2009 Braun BGP-001. There's an all-new career mode that lets you live life as an F1 superstar, establish yourself as one of the most respected or the most notorious drivers on the circuit. Leverage your F1 expertise in contract negotiations with teams like McLaren and Mercedes. Engage the press in time-pressured interviews where every answer counts towards your reputation. Pick your rivals and overtake them in the official 2018 season. Use your F1 expertise in the R&D system and fully upgrade your car to your liking and get ahead of the competition. What's new in 2018 is it makes you feel like you're right in the action. Revamped visuals make this the most realistic looking F1 game to date. Drive through dense fog, rain, and blazing heat. Hey, in the UK, you can do that all in one morning. Feel the raw energy of an F1 car with F1 2018's improved physics and feel that suspension go to work. Feel every bump and turn across 21 international circuits. Use that F1 know-how that you learned on Missed Apex Podcast to decide how to utilize your car's power using in-depth ERS management. Playing your cards right can lead to exciting head-to-head battles on track. F1 2018 is available from August 24th. Go to formula1game.com or visit your local retailer to pick up a copy and make headlines today. FYI, I will be on Xbox One. My game tag is Spanners Ready on there. And Chris Rainbow Sparkles Stevens will be on PlayStation 4. So make sure you come and race us online once it's released. Okay, back to the podcast.
All right, so we mentioned earlier the 2019 regulations, and I have to admit, like, I'm kind of baffled here because there's still nothing on the website. Normally, we see 2019 regulations have already shown up, and they've already marked up, so you can see the difference from last year. There's nothing official yet. Now, I know Carter told us that, well, you know, they would have been discussions in the strategy group, so everybody has a real idea. But honestly, I mean, I'm going to ask this because this is the only thing that occurs to me. Do you think they're just going to wait as late as possible to reduce the amount of loopholes that are found before the start of next season?
Potentially, that is one of the reasons that they've opted to do this. But that could actually go in reverse to them because the teams might interpret things in a way that they haven't asked about in technical directives, etc. And we end up with designs that weren't intended for the way that they actually are. I think much of the problem that we have here is that just the 29 regulations in total are a massive leap, and they're trying to really nullify any advantage that can be made from the big teams in respect of the design of the front wing, the front brake ducts, and certain other areas that will be affected by these rule changes. I'm really frustrated, if I'm honest, that I haven't seen an actual set of regulations from the FIA at this point, because I really want to just draw a front wing. I want to know what the rules are surrounding the front wing, and I want to see what is potentially an option for the teams going into next season, because there will be an unintended consequences of the way the regulations are written. And I do think that it will be right for one team to come along and have a small advantage against the rest.
Yeah, well, I think you would, again, not be the only one because, I mean, the season's halfway over. And I don't know. As we all know, the purpose of this is they're sort of testing out some of their theories about how to improve the aerodynamics, in particular the aerodynamics for the trailing car. But we don't really know how effective it's going to be. Or you had mentioned, too, they were trying to control the wash and that a lot of that comes from the front wings, but there's still a lot of open areas where the teams might do something unexpected to sort of spoil this plan. And it would just seem like if the teams were on board with this basic idea aerodynamically, getting them the regulation sooner means that you have a chance to rewrite any poorly worded sections that you might have inadvertently put out there.
Yeah, but we've been in these situations on rule changes in the past. There's always an unintended consequence of the way in which the rules are written. The teams are always able to find more than the FIA and Formula One management are able to put together in terms of regulation, because there's more of them. You know, you've got 500 people in a small Formula One team these days fighting against 10 people perhaps who are creating the regulations or attempting to create regulations. So there's always going to be that defeat element. You're always going to have the number game. and the ability to beat that smaller number. And it's why we see that the smaller teams always struggle against the bigger teams, because it is a resource and a numbers factor at the end of the day, that those bigger teams just have more available to them than the smaller teams.
Okay. We have seen recently in the press some pictures of the aerodynamics, some CFD pictures of how the aerodynamic profile, they slice them different ways, of how the 2019 profile projected will compare to the current 2018 profile. And I was curious to get your input on that, because there is a visible difference as they're being presented to us. But I'm not sure how much of a difference there really is relative to what they are claiming.
Okay, yeah. I mean, those pictures are fascinating. It was Automotor and Sport again. Our favourite friends who like to do a lot of technical stuff as well. So the problem that I have with anything along these lines is that there's, you know, those images that are shown are unrepresentative when we consider a 2018 car, let alone a 2019 car. So we're basing them on somebody's interpretation of the regulations, and they're lacking fidelity as well, which is always problematic, especially when it's CFD. So if we imagine that the 2018 car that somebody's roughly drawn up is perhaps at best case a Williams in terms of its CFD ability, imagine how much further on the likes of Mercedes and Ferrari are compared to that car in terms of the intricacy of those surfaces. It just doesn't really gel in terms of how you interpret it versus the new regulations. And unfortunately, the CFD that I saw, they hadn't taken away some of the front brake duct elements in terms of actually taking them off the model. So the results are skewed in that respect, but it's a good base. If anybody wants to have a look at those, I did retweet it onto my timeline from Toby Gruner, who works for Automotor and Sport. They are nice to look at, and they do prove that there will be less outwash because they don't have the surfaces on the wings in order to move the airflow out around the front tyres. And they do prove that obviously that has an impact on the flow stream in the diffuser, and also then obviously the wider rear wing, taller rear wing, etc., will also have an impact on how the upwash from the rear wing occurs. So, you know, it does pay some significance in terms of you do see a difference, but it's a stark difference, and I don't think we'll see such a stark difference when it comes to the performance of next year's cars.
So my takeaway from that then is that the outwash the teams are generating is very important to their overall aerodynamic functioning and the amount of downforce they're able to generate at any given speed. And even though the pictures we see show a fairly marked reduction in that, and again, if I'm understanding it correctly, the idea is not that you can get rid of the quote-unquote low-pressure air when you are trailing a car, but to get rid of a lot of the turbulence, which would be provided by all this outwash and vortices that you're talking about, that will unevenly affect the leading surface of the trailing car. So even if you don't have like regular air pressure air because you're directly behind the car and the air is getting scooted over you per se, that following behind it, you'd rather have an even pressure to deal with. And that what's causing problems for the trailing cars is that they're not getting that. They're getting these high-speed blasts of air in between the low pressure created by the rear wing.
Okay, yeah. The way that I'll explain this is that if you imagine the front wing on a Formula One car is physically connected to the rest of the car. Let's say it has a surface that connects from the front wing to the floor. That's intentionally what the teams are trying to do with the airflow. They're essentially trying to create a surface that connects all of the structures together. Now, obviously, you can't do that from a physicality point of view because the regulations don't permit it. We have had in the past, if we go back to the later 80s, early 90s, we had sort of these surfaces that would go inside the rear wheel. I think if you remember sort of the Mansell era cars, you remember most definitely a surface that edged around the front, the inner side of the front wheel. Now, that's what they're trying to do with aerodynamic structures. They can't physically create these structures, so they're trying to create them with an aerodynamic structure instead. Now, what happens when the front wing doesn't see a natural airflow, so it's in turbulence, it cuts off some of this aero structure and it makes the rest of the car underperform. So it's not only the front wing that is affected by the wake, it's the total distribution of airflow over the car that is affected. So that the car loses downforce in total, not just at the front wing. And what these regulations are looking to do is to dampen that result by obviously dampening the problem at the front wing. And then that should have a cascade effect down the rest of the car. The problem that Formula One will face in 2019-2020 is that, unfortunately, the teams didn't allow the FIA to have a little bit of margin in terms of stopping the development of the barge boards and the leading edge of the floor. And unfortunately, that area is giving them a huge amount of performance. And so what they may lose at the front end, they may be able to sort of gain back by creating these aerodynamic structures a little further back. Yes, they're going to lose downforce or total downforce, but I don't think we're going to see a massive difference in the terms of how fast these cars are overall. The biggest issue is will reducing the turbulence improve the ability for drivers to follow in the wake and obviously increase overtaking? And for me, although everybody thinks that DRS is an artificiality, this is as well. We're reining in designers and the way that they're operating in order to artificially improve the show. So, yeah, there's some problems with these regulations, and unfortunately, until we get to 2021, I think we're kind of going to be stuck in the same monotonous loop.
All right, but I mean, don't we always rein in designers? There are always legality boxes. They always have capped design at a certain point and made people go look elsewhere for their inspiration. And it's the nature of the sport. It would seem to me that, okay, you've done this for X years. Now we're going to say you got to go look at an entirely different place to create the same amount of performance. It doesn't seem that unusual to me. And if it has the advantage of improving things for the trailing driver, well, then, you know, it's a win-win, because now the design team is going to be busy trying to find performance somewhere else instead of, you know, eking out tents here and there.
Yeah, I mean, there are advantages to moving in this direction. And as you say, we have had this spiral of regulatory changes. 2009 obviously being the big waypoint. Then we had them again in 2014, again in 2017, and now we're having another lot again in 2019. But unfortunately, this is one of Formula One's biggest issues, because from a financial point of view, it puts a huge amount of pressure on the smaller teams who do not have the resource to carry out the sort of development programs that the lead teams can have. And it becomes a cyclic problem within Formula One, whereby one team will sort of come out of the natural position that they find themselves in, like Williams did in 2014, let's say, or Brawn did in 2009, Red Bull in 2009, 2010.
Yeah.
You know, you find these cycles with regulations that find that certain teams make better advantage of what they're seeing. But unfortunately, there's no big leap for everybody. And closing up that pack is going to be a massive, massive venture for Formula One.
A lot can happen in the next 3 years. Like a chatbot may be your new best friend. But what won't change? Needing health insurance. UnitedHealthcare Tri-Term medical plans are available for these changing times. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they offer budget-friendly, flexible coverage for people who are in between jobs or missed open enrollment. The plans last nearly 3 years in some states, with access to a nationwide network of doctors and hospitals. So for whatever tomorrow brings, UnitedHealthcare Tri-Term medical plans may be for you. Learn more at uh1.com.
If you're struggling to lose weight, you've probably heard about weight loss medications like Wegovy or Zepbound, and you might be wondering if they're right for you. Meet PlushCare,
a leading telehealth provider with doctors who are there for you day and night to partner with you in your weight loss journey. If you qualify, they can safely prescribe you medication from the comfort of your own home. To get started, visit plushcare.com/weightloss. That's plushcare.com/weightloss. plushcare.com/weightloss.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news! Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Yeah, it will be. And I don't know that... I mean, when I ever have the time, I would love to go back and look at how many teams on any given year were ever truly competitive and had a chance to win. And I would guess that once you got outside of the era of exceeding unreliability, that probably, you know, you might have had three teams who were properly in the running in any given season. And that would be amazing. And that's what we have now. The difference is it's been the same two or three teams. We haven't seen manufacturers cycle in once we got to Mercedes to show up and be competitive. And I guess we're going to have Renault now to follow for that narrative. We'll see if they can move up. And as they move up, I had to make a guess. Perhaps Red Bull might be moving back a little bit. But there's only two or three teams that ever seem to really have a proper shot at it. And the best you can hope for is that it's close enough that the midfield teams will occasionally be able to steal a podium here or there when things go wrong at the front. And I would guess, if Formula One is being clever, that's really what they're trying to do. They're never going to get all in any of these teams in with a shot to win. But hopefully some of the better backmarkers will occasionally be able to steal a podium, because that will make things a lot more interesting for your viewer.
Most definitely. And I have just had an email in from Formula One Media with an interview from Ross Brawn talking about 2021 and the way in which they're looking to reshape the car, which, unfortunately, I read the words, "We are trying to make them look better," which is always a dangerous move for Formula One in certain respects, and has caused many ugly designs in the recent past. So I think they have to be wary in that respect. But he's also talking about the cost cap situation, and that they're trying to soft launch it between 2019 to 2021 as well. So as of next year, the teams will actually start to start the glide path towards a cost cap, which has apparently been agreed between the teams. So that does bring some interesting situations coming down the line in terms of development and the way in which the teams are actually structured and the resources that they're able to maintain.
Yeah, it does. And it might once again give some of the teams that are struggling right now a chance to catch up, because they're no longer fighting with such an asymmetric amount of resource, which at the end of the day is the obvious and singular problem, is that the teams that are the teams that always tend to win everything are the teams that have 3 to 4 to 5 times as much resource to shove at all their problems. And that's... Yeah. Almost impossible to overcome. I know everybody had a lot of fun at the last test talking about the Williams and the amazing multicolored chassis. So looking at those, did that offer any insight to you? Did it give you any ideas? And does it seem like maybe they're on the road to a solution to their magnificent season of woe?
It is certainly a magnificent season of woe, isn't it? Unfortunately, it's a massive slide from Williams, and a team of its heritage is a difficult pill to swallow. In terms of the United colours of Williams, they were obviously testing out a 2019-esque front wing. So it was a front wing that was very basic, 5 elements, and kind of looking at 2019's aerodynamic structures. Now, I wouldn't read too much into the actual overall design of that front wing in terms of what we see with it compared to next season, just purely because we've been here and seen this before. If anybody was around when Honda were testing a sort of mule car back in 2008, they tested a very simplistic front wing on their sort of hybrid car before the 2009 regulations came into play. And then Braun had perhaps the most complex front wing on the grid at the time. So I wouldn't read too much into what we're seeing in that respect. I do think there's scope, or there will be scope within these new regulations to perhaps see some differences between the designs, because obviously we saw Forest India run a 2019 spec front wing as well, and both were very similar in their design aspects. But all they're trying to do is understand fundamentally where that airflow would be heading down the rest of the car. And that's why we saw the multicoloured Flovis on the Williams, because they were just trying to see where the airflow was hitting on the rest of the chassis. In terms of, was it interesting and did it provide any answers? Well, realistically, only Williams can tell you that, because they have the data pre that 2019 front wing. So they can correlate the two pieces of information together and work out perhaps where they're going wrong with this year. It could give them some insight into what's going actually wrong with this year's chassis, which they really need going into to next season. But yeah, it was a fascinating segment of pictures in terms of understanding where airflow hits certain areas. And sometimes it's not where you would expect.
All right. Let's say we go, since we started talking about the back of the midfield, let's say we go and talk about the rest of the midfield. And, you know, as we talk about the midfield, to me, the most interesting case here has got to be Haas, because they flat out skipped the test in Hungary. I mean, they were like, we're just going to head to the beach. We're gonna kick off our shoes and hang out. And we're not worried about next year at all. And I'm just curious, like, do you think that was a clever choice for them?
I think in terms of cost, it was a clever choice, because if you've got nothing to test, then perhaps it's, you know, what's the point in being there? Steiner actually made that comment that, you know, they'd got nothing to test because they'd got no developments for the car. They're in a situation where they're in the middle of the season. They understand their chassis. They understand their tyre performance, and they understand where they are relative to the rest of the pack. And if you're not actually going to gain anything from the test, which when you've got a Santino sized hole in your junior driver program, then what is the point in being there? The other teams will just, that have got the money, the resource, will continue to pound around to try to get answers. But I do think from Haas' point of view, where they currently stand, then, yeah, I don't see any reason why they needed to be there.
You know, we had talked about, and it came up with the Carter show too, we had talked a bit about Force India, and it seems like there's a little bit of a fly in the ointment for the Stroll Consortium. What exactly happened with that? And are we even going to see them, do you think, racing at Spa? Could that now be in doubt?
Well, this all might be overtaken quite quickly with the way in which this is all going to unfold rather rapidly. But Force India have arrived at Spa, and they've immediately started to take all of the stickers and whatnot off of their equipment. In other words, we're no longer Force India. And I think there's two mechanisms going on here. Firstly, from an outside point of view, perhaps they don't want to appear to be the old team in as much as that they've now got new investments. So they want to appear to obviously be whatever they're going to be in the future, Force Stroll or whatever it turns out to be. But also, from what I understand, that the consortium have only actually bought the assets from Force India, and the administrators have been unable to sell them the actual company, Formula One Team Limited, Force India Formula One Team Limited, which means that the entry that is owned by that team is associated to that limited company, which also then means, obviously, that Force India that are at the circuit technically aren't Force India anymore, and they don't have the right to be competing in Spa. So it's a rather complex situation in terms of the way in which the contracts, etc., work behind the scenes. But it could be that a lot of negotiation is going to have to go on in the next few days in order that they do race at Spa.
Now, I will be honest, I don't know exactly when this episode is going to drop. So the answer to all of this could well have happened by time the listeners hear it. But I'm also fascinated because if what you're telling me is true, doesn't that absolutely mean that they've lost their prize money from last year? There's no question about that.
Yeah, I mean, the way that I see it is that for the soon-to-be Force Stroll team will have to basically become a new racing entity from the scratch. So that means that firstly, they will lose any prize money from FOM in terms of, you know, what they've accrued in the last few years. They will also lose all of the points that Force India have accrued up until this point because they are a new racing entity. And finally, it means that, you know, it's a full reset. Going racing might be a difficulty this weekend. I think they've literally turned up this weekend to put pressure on the FIA to make a decision because they will actually have to pay the FIA $500,000 in order to be a new entry. Plus, on top of that, and there's no figure in the sporting regulations that actually suggest how much this should be, but they have to pay a late payment fee for entering the season late. So there's a lot that will have to go on behind the scenes to make this possible this race weekend.
Right. And as is often the case, will this also require the acquiescence of the other nine teams on the grid in order for them to be eligible to participate this weekend?
I would imagine so, yes. Although the FIA will have an overriding factor in terms of who can join as a new team. I don't know the ins and outs of the new team procedure, but having read through the sporting regulations, the way in which this will unfold is that effectively they'll become a new team, which is obviously problematic in terms of revenue and also just the way in which that they're going to operate going forward. As I say, they'll have lost the championship points and it will effectively be a start from zero. So it will effectively say that Williams aren't the worst team anymore, unless obviously they beat them this race out. Also, what we have to remember is that behind the scenes, the new consortium are having to do numerous deals because effectively that if they're starting from scratch with only the assets, then they're a new team, they're a new company. And obviously that means that all the deals that were already in place, it's a very difficult mechanism in terms of engine contracts and fuel suppliers and driver contracts and a whole field of problems, which obviously has an impact on Lance Stroll as well in some respects, and the way in which that he may be brought into the team. Now, the question marks that have been there, will he replace one of the drivers at Spa? Well, you know, I think they might just want to race at Spa, let alone get Lance in the seat. And then they will have to pay a penalty if they want to bring him in one of the other races later down, another financial penalty. So it could be a very messy situation going on over the next few days.
It sounds like it might very well be. I get hung up because if they have bought just the assets, then that would mean an insolvency, and an insolvency would mean that the driver contracts are canceled. So I think it may not be an issue in terms of going forward with the two drivers' contracts. They would have to be renegotiated, which could leave room for some swapping. But for Williams, it would be a problem for Stroll because he has signed a contract with them and is required to drive for them, as far as I'm aware, and would have to buy himself out. Force India has been most vocal in maintaining the independence of the midfield. Now they're bought out by Stroll. We've had Sauber bought out by new money. Have we reached a point where, financially speaking, the Haas model is the model that will predominate, and you're either a manufacturer fighting for the top of the podium at the sharp end, or you're simply choosing whose B team or C team you would like to be. I mean, is that really where we have come to in the sport?
Yeah, well, we're already at an impasse whereby we have a two-tier formula. It's not openly admitted, but we're there. You know, the three or four lead teams are the ones that will fight it out for the main championship, and everybody else is just picking up scraps. Magnussen even came out recently and suggested that he was in the lead of the Formula B series, an imaginary series that he's made up in his head, which he's leading because he's at the top of the, you know, the championship points that still exist outside of the top three teams. So, you know, I think we're already there, unfortunately. And the financial model that we've already talked about earlier on in the show just brings us to that point whereby Haas have come along and changed the way in which people perceive it's possible to run a Formula One team and changed the way in which that the financial model works. And now other teams are starting to realise that, hang on a minute, we can actually do that and we can do it for less than we're currently doing it for. Yes, we might not be able to challenge the likes of Ferrari and Mercedes, but were we able to challenge them anyway? And that's the conundrum that Formula One currently finds itself in, I'm afraid.
I get where you're coming from. I don't know. It's a tough issue because I have heard that Williams might be scrapping its gearbox division entirely in order to afford things. Who knows what's going to happen at McLaren, but obviously I think they're in for quite a bloodletting too. And it seems like unless you have your own engine deal, or unless you're just a flat-out manufacturer, the top of the field is just not even worth worrying about. And we've even seen Haas on the heels of Red Bull several times this season.
Yeah, which is predominantly down to the issues that Red Bull find themselves in with their current power unit supplier. One might suggest that they may not have similar problems next season when they're running a Honda power unit, let's say. I'm not suggesting any ill advice has been given from Renault, but they're obviously not getting the support that perhaps they were getting when they were a works team, Renault. The thing with Formula One is, especially in the technical respect, there's always a state of flux. There's always movement and people moving around within the sport, and that causes problems in terms of the way in which each of the teams operate. As you say, Williams, I haven't understood in this hybrid era why they've continued to build their own gearbox. It made zero sense in terms of resource versus reward. You know, Force India have made gains in that respect. They used to purchase their gearbox from McLaren in the V8 era and have moved over to Mercedes. They enjoy that relationship. Why have Williams continued to build their own? I understand that they want to be a manufacturer in their own right, but to the detriment of being able to afford it, perhaps isn't the right way about going things. And I do think there'll be a state of change within Formula One in that respect, especially when we get to 2021 and a lot of the parts are talked about being standardized, or at least being the parts being reined in terms of what can actually be done with them. So, yeah, I do see, unfortunately, we're in a bit of a state in Formula One in some respects. But obviously, we are only a couple of years away from what might be a potentially better situation.
Okay, so this all then kind of comes back to the change in the listed parts that we've discussed on and off. And is that ultimately going to be the tactic, that plus the soft budget cap, that Braun and Liberty are looking at to revamp the competitiveness of this whole series? Is this how you see that playing out?
I see that exactly how it's playing out. It's a double-edged sword. They're basically trying to restrict the ability of the lead teams and bring them down to the pegs of the lower teams in order that the competitive edge is brought closer. Achieving that might be a little bit more difficult, but that is their aim at this present stage, I would say.
Okay, so before we go, is there anything else that you want to get to, development-wise, anything that's already wandered in the door for any of the teams that we haven't discussed? In other words, is there any other business?
The only thing that I would say is obviously, I don't know when we're going to put this piece out, but this I've already seen that Red Bull have copied Ferrari's interesting twin element wing mirror arrangement that they've been running since the start of the season and was subsequently copied by Toro Rosso. It's a rather an aggressive version of it because they've basically taken their original design and made it into this two-piece arrangement that Ferrari have had. So, yeah, that's already on the books for Spa. We've already seen some bits tested ahead of Spa that I would suggest might be seen by Ferrari and Mercedes in terms of exhaust setup for Ferrari and rear wing for Mercedes. But aside from that, I think we're just waiting for everything to come through.
Excellent. Well, do tell us where everybody can find you on the internet, and don't forget to brag about your very own website.
Okay, so the best place to find me is on Twitter because I update that quite regularly, perhaps not as much as I used to do, but it's SummersF1. And obviously you can find my work at summersf1.co.uk along with some of Matt's, and obviously my work over at motorsport.com.
Excellent. And as for me, I'm Matt Trumpet. You can find me at MattPT55 on the internet. Do go check out my lovely and glorious wife, who may or may not dispatch me after she gets her anniversary present today, at aweaverwrites.com. And remember, chicks dig heels, wounds cause scars, and glory is a fungible concept under certain philosophical precepts. This has been Tech Time, presented by Mist Apex Podcast. Anyway, I think that went reasonably well.
I would say the same.
The Force India thing just keeps on getting more unbelievable. Every little bit that I hear about it, I'm just like,
Yeah, it's a disaster. Major cluster.
Yeah, man, yeah. That rule about the insolvency is really, really problematic.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Planning for your next trip? Elevate your travel style with Quince. Quince has all the jet-setting essentials you'll want for your next getaway, like European linen, premium luggage options, buttery soft Italian leather bags, and so much more. And is all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical manufacturing practices. Pack your bags with high-quality essentials you'll be wearing for vacations to come with Quince. Go to quince.com/pack for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Hey everyone, Craig Robinson here. I want you to check out the Ways to Win podcast, brought to you by Ford and the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. On Ways to Win, Coach Cal and I will discuss leadership lessons we've learned. We know all about the days spent perfecting your craft outside of the limelight and have knowledge to share about how strength, inspiration, encouragement, and adaptability are the key ingredients to drive toward your dreams. And those same ingredients can be found in the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. So check out my podcast, Ways to Win, and also check out the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. Learn more at Ford.com. Built Ford tough, built Ford proud.